Okay, so welcome to the first of UPA's Graduation and Beyond series. This is the APIC internship one. My name is Keely Lundy. I'm a third year doc student at the University of Utah and the current student representative of the UPA board. Wing is unable to be here. He's the student representative elect, and he's a second year doctoral student at the University of Utah as well. The agenda of this meeting, it's a little improvised, but I'm going to provide some background on our special guest. And then our special guest will address some questions which had been submitted in advance. And thank you to those who did submit those. So I am joined today by Dr. Rapaz, who received her PsyD from Illinois School of Professional Psychology in Chicago, Illinois, and is a licensed psychologist in the state of Utah. She completed her internship at the Utah State Hospital, where she specialized in working with individuals with serious mental illness, severe mood disorder, trauma, and borderline personality disorder. She is currently the assistant clinical director at the Utah State Hospital and is the interim training director. She has served as training director since 2015. She has also served as the director of psychology, director of centralized treatment programming, and director of substance abuse treatment. She has received formal training in acceptance and commitment therapy and prolonged exposure, as well as been intensively trained in dialectical behavior therapy by Behavioral Tech. She is the past president of the UPA, and we are so happy to have her join us today. So welcome.
Thank you, Keely, and thank you for being flexible about the date. I apologize for having to reschedule last minute on Friday. Unfortunately, I had some medical issues come up. So thank you for just being flexible.
Of course. So now we're going to talk about the pre-submitted questions. So the first one that we had was just like how many sites in general should we apply to for an APIC internship?
So I feel like this is one of those ones that like really depends on you, where you're going, how competitive your application is, and how realistic you're being about your sites. A lot of people will apply anywhere from like 10 to 15, which is a lot, but they'll have some of their like far-reaching sites, right? And then some that are like, okay, these are like my safety sites, and then ones that they're really well focused for. No, other people who have gone as low as 5, and they're just very well tailored for where they're applying and feel pretty confident in the sites that they're applying to. So that really just kind of depends on what you're looking at, what type of sites you're looking at, how competitive the sites are that you're looking at. All of those will just play roles in that. One of the nice things for you guys is that you won't need to consider traveling expenses. It's just that appy cost, right? Where you have to pay to use the appy portal. And so you need to take that into account, but at least you won't have as much like travel costs. There is some utility in applying widely across the country. And some people are more willing to apply to less desired areas where there's less applicants. And so that like also can increase odds of matching and such. And then also if you're looking at APA internship sites versus just APIC.
Awesome. So you'd mentioned that we would just have to have like the appy cost. Do you think that kind of the internship field itself is moving towards those virtual interviews overall?
Yes. So APIC has put out pretty strong recommendations again this year that we not do in-person interviews. And we at the state hospital have decided not to do in-person interviews, depending on where COVID is. For the sake of the applicants, we're doing an open house, hopefully. And that's so that our applicants can see it if they want, but we're not even holding our open house until after we've already decided on our rankings, so that it's not to help us as a site, but to help the students. And there's a lot of sites that I've talked to. I regularly attend the APIC calls. In fact, I have one this week, tomorrow. And a lot of the training directors have talked about like how they do once COVID settles down, if we stay in this virtual format, would like to continue to do, or would like to start to offer open houses or continue to do them if they were doing them already for the sake of the students.
So oh, that's definitely good to know for everybody. Thank you. The next question is, as a school psychology student, so this is a school psych applicant looking for more of a clinical hospital-based internship. Are there certain APIC internships that are strictly for clinical counseling psychology students?
There are. So when you go to the APIC page and use the APIC directory, it'll say in there their preferred, and school is one of those that some people will say no to. I can tell you at our hospital, from working with so many great students from the University of Utah's doctoral school psych program, that we've actually opened our program up to school psych students because you guys have such great experience and training, especially with assessments, which works well for the kiddos that we serve. And so I think looking at the hospitals that you're interested in, and then just really checking that APIC directory. And I know there's times where people would reach out to me and say, hey, I know you typically don't take this degree, or you typically you need this or that, but I don't meet that. Are you willing to make an exception or at least review my appy? And they would kind of talk to me ahead of time before submitting. And I feel like training directors will give a very honest answer. There are people who are like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you have good training, apply. And there's others where I was like, you can apply, but you likely won't make the cut of people that we interview. So I would encourage you guys to also just reach out to those training directors that you're interested in.
Awesome. That's good. That's good advice. That goes into the next question, which was just like, what can we do to like figure out about those clinical hospital-based internships? So reaching out to those people or those sites that are interesting that may not explicitly say they accept the school psych student.
And it should say right on the APIC directory. That's something we have to update every year. So it should say right on there whether or not they're accepting school psych students.
Okay, awesome. That's good direction. The next question is, what are some tips to ensure my application is competitive enough for these like settings? I think this is going into the other one, like clinical hospital-based internships. But just overall, like what makes a competitive application, would you say?
So it definitely depends on sites. Different training directors look at different things. But some of the things that all training directors I've talked to have talked about is applications that are proofread. I cannot tell you how many times I've read applications, and I'm not talking about like minor proofreading errors that we all make. I'm sure if you pull one of my psych evals, you all would find like 3 or 4 mistakes, despite me going through it multiple times. I'm talking about like major proofreading errors, people who write using contractions. So writing like very professionally, I think, is one of the very first things, because that's how we're a heavy writing site. I mean, we do a lot of psych assessments. Our interns usually get a minimum of 12 comprehensive assessments when they leave. And so we screen that out. Other training directors I've talked to, it's like, yeah, because that just means it's going to be difficult, even if you're just doing notes. So make sure they're proofread. Ask people to proofread them for you. Look at what the site is asking for. Like, what are their minimum requirements? Make sure you meet them. If you're not going to meet them, or if you're not meeting them yet, but you know you're getting lots of good experience this year, put that in your letter. Really describing that, and even maybe acknowledging, hey, I realize that while you guys are looking for people that have X amount of therapy hours and I only have, you know, Y amount, this year I'm anticipated to get Z amount and which will more than exceed your requirements. So putting that type of stuff in there, of your letters, that's another one to proofread. I can't tell you how many times I've had letters that were addressed to other training directors.
Oh, so no.
Check that.
It's just one of those like small detail things where I'm like, oh, if you're doing that now, like how is it going to translate to evals that you're doing? Are you going to, you know, but then also tailoring your letter to the site shows your interest in that site. So that can be helpful. If you're passionate about the work that that site does, let that really shine through and feel free to tie it to like your long-term career goals. A lot of training directors will look at like, okay, how is my training going to help? How's my training program going to help this student reach their long-term career goals? Because we want people who are going to be happy at our site, right? Not just somebody looking to fill it. So really just tying that all together and making that part as personalized as possible. And then getting strong letter writers. I believe there's a question later about letters of recommendation. Don't just ask somebody if they can write you a letter. Ask if they can write you a strong letter. And that I think is important. A lot of people will read into those. Different sites put varying weight on research. And then the other thing I would say is, if you don't know a treatment, that's okay. Don't try to pretend like you know things that you don't know. And that goes in your interviews as well. Like, I have so much more respect for our applicants who are like, yeah, I don't know DBT yet. But that's part of the reason I want to come here is because like I've learned little pieces, but I've never done comprehensive DBT. I have so much more respect for that than somebody who comes in and is like, yeah, I did DBT. And then what they talk about is like not DBT whatsoever. So it's okay. Like, you're not supposed to know everything by the time you go to internship.
Wow, such great recommendations. I feel like I learned quite a bit, just like the proofreading piece. Also just even checking the letters of recommendation that are written for myself or whoever the applicant is. And I like the piece about a strong letter of recommendation. So including that and like in your asks of them is really, really good recommendations. This next one is kind of talking about like that personal statement, or I think you titled it or said it that it's like the letter.
They're two separate things. Have a letter that you're going to write to the training director, a cover letter.
Okay.
And that's where you want to put like everything about that site. And that's the tailored piece. Sorry, I just said letter. I should have said cover letter. So that cover letter is what's like really kind of tailored towards the site.
Okay.
Your essay, you have your personal statement essay, which is separate. And okay. So then I think you were going to ask about the personal statement essay.
Yeah. So kind of two questions. So what makes a good unforgettable personal statement? And then can you use that as kind of just, or do you need to tailor it for each site that you apply to?
I would say you don't necessarily need to tailor it. And I'm not even sure if in the new portal you can. The new portal's only been used for a year. So last year was our first year. And I've not talked to anybody who submitted applications through it. One of the things to be aware of though, and if you can tailor it, is you should be honest in your application. So let me start with that. But if you're like, if you're trying to make it fit to the site that you're at, and you put something in your personal statement that's going to conflict with your letter, then you want to, your cover letter, then you want to like make sure those jive. There have been times where I see like a cover letter is all about like their passion of working with serious mental illness and being in a state hospital. And then something in their personal statement talks about like opening private practice type goals. And it's like, it doesn't jive. And then that's just kind of like, oh, what is it really? With your personal statement, so you should be able to use it, but if there's little things that you change, if you're able to do that, you know, do it wisely and honestly, because you want to be happy. And things that make it stand out, I think, are ones that you can really see this and read and hear the student's passion in, or their excitement about the field. Also, like some things to stay away from, which I think is almost easier to talk about, is we get like this garden variety, just kind of very vanilla letter that a lot of people write. And it's, without a lot of like them in it. It's just kind of going through the facts of stuff. So just think about that. Like, is this something anybody else in my cohort could write? And if it is, then you might need to add a little bit more because it's a personal statement, right? Also, don't get too personal. So
okay,
that can be a problem. Like, don't put in there like when I was first hospitalized, type stuff. You know, that is because as a training director, as I'm reading that, I'm going to be like, oh, where is like your limits around self-disclosure, right? It doesn't mean I'm automatically going to weed it out, but it is going to be one of those things that I'm wondering about. And so it's something totally appropriate to talk about in supervision, but your application is probably not the place you want to put that. People will just sometimes go into like way too much personal detail of their life that it's like, this isn't a place to tell all like your deep, dark secrets either. Some people make it very like it almost, I've read ones that are almost the exact same as their research essay and everything in their personal statements about their research. For me, that's less interesting because I'm like, I'm all about like clinical work. But for my colleagues that are more research-based, they like that piece because they're like, oh, they're all about the research and this is who they are and this is what their passion is. And so that's the piece about like just being authentic to yourself in it. And just proofread them. I feel like the personal statements are the areas, the cover letter and the personal statements, which are the two big like writing things we read first, often have some typos.
Okay, so proofread and keep the personal statement not too personal. Good tips.
And Keely, your DCT, like at your school, I'm assuming, do they review your essays?
I'm not sure. I think you have to ask.
Okay.
So, but yeah.
You might want to ask. I think it's good to ask another professional to review them as well to just kind of help you with that. It doesn't mean you have to do everything they say because you still want to be like authentically you. But sometimes that can be helpful of like, oh yeah, let's change this or that. So it could be a supervisor, your DCT, whoever.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Sorry, going to the next one. Who should I consider when choosing letters of recommendation? I know you mentioned, would you write a strong letter for me, but are there, specific roles or, supervisors that you look for particularly in those letters of rec?
Yes. So people who know you well, the better they know you, the more that just shows through on the letter. And the stronger the letter is, and then what they know. So if I was to get three letters from teachers only, like professors or researchers, I'd be like, this doesn't tell me anything about Keely's clinical skills. So making sure that you're including people who know your clinical skills, your research skills, especially if it's a research heavy site, if it's not a research heavy site, I personally in my site, I like two letters from people who have supervised you clinically and one person who knows you academically. And then your director of clinical training also writes a piece in there. So some people will have their DCT write a letter as well. Sometimes that's the same thing. It's literally the exact same thing that I'm reading twice. So that's not as useful. So you might, if your DCT is somebody you want to ask for a letter, ask them if it's going to be different than the piece they have to do for your appy. And if they say, oh no, I'll just put the same thing in, that's not going to be as helpful to a training director. And then the more specific it is to the setting you're in, the more helpful that is too. So if you're applying to a lot of VAs and you've done a VA practicum or externship, getting a VA supervisor could be more helpful. If you're applying to inpatient, get an inpatient, schools, get schools.
Okay. No, that's good. So people that know you and that can really speak to you, do you think it would be beneficial to kind of give like a synopsis of the sites that you're applying to those letters of rec or?
to the people who are writing them mm-hmm. for you?
You could, if it kind of depends. I know when I write letters of recommendation for practicum students, as well as interns who are looking for fellowship, is I'll ask them, what do you want me to highlight in your letter of recommendation? Because they're going to send, it's like a pretty uniform form that they send actually now, rather than even a full letter. And it's like the structured letter. And it's the same one that goes to basically every site now, which is hard because sometimes when we're really invested in a student in a special site, we would personalize it more, but that's not as easy to do. So I would, rather than talk about sites, talk about broader, like, this is what I'm hoping to get from internship.
Gotcha. Okay. And when should we ask these people?
As soon as possible.
Oh, like even before maybe your fourth year or anything?
Oh, well, okay. So let me back up because I was thinking about people that are applying now. I asked people, and I have people ask me when they're sometimes getting ready to leave the site. Hey, I know I'm not applying for internship for another year, but when the time comes, are you willing to write me a letter? So you can do that when you're leaving. And then typically with letter writers, people will ask me like in August or September. And that's why if you're applying your fourth year for a fifth year internship, wherever you do your fourth year externship or practicum work, if it's someplace new, they're not going to be your letter writers because they're not going to know you well enough. Applications are due as early as November 1. And there's a lot of places that have a November 1 deadline. And so making sure you give your letter writers enough time, I think is really important.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, to also let just people you're working with, maybe your second or third year that you have a relationship with, about like, hey, this is in the future. They might be able to take notes and things that they want to highlight later. So, okay.
Yeah.
And then kind of our last question block is what are internship site supervisors or training directors looking for in interns?
Oh, I feel like that differs so much based on the supervisor. And I think this is why it's so important for you guys to interview your sites as much as the sites interviewing you. I know, like for me personally, my thing is I want a student who's passionate about learning what we do at our hospital. And I like students, they don't need to know DBT yet. They don't need to know ACT yet. They could like have never worked with a patient who has a psychotic disorder before. If they're passionate about it and willing to learn, to me, and is excited about working with that population, that's for me the biggest thing. And then being able to just right. And then having good foundational assessment skills. So we use like the WAIS, the WISC, like all the like normal Wechsler stuff, but we also have like NEPSI and DCAFs, and we'll use the WEMS, and we use the Rorschach, like the updated scoring system, the RPAS. I'm not as worried if you don't know the NEPSI or the DCAFs. Or the Rorschach, but I want to make sure like you have good foundational skills with like the WAIS, the WISC, and understand like test measurement. So that's kind of like where I'm at. I know one of my colleagues, he wants people who really have like a little bit stronger experience. It doesn't necessarily need to be with our population. So there's just like variance within our site. And then when I talk to other sites, some of them are like, oh, I want them to have experience in the age range we're working with. So if they're working with a lot of like under 18 and somebody just has adult experience, that's something that they're like, oh, well, I really want people who have this, or it can really just vary by site so much.
And from my kind of like initial investigation, like on the APIC website, I've seen that each site kind of talks about like 50% emphasis or 30% emphasis. When we're looking for what those internship sites are wanting in an intern, what do you think is the best place to look, or what is the best thing to read to get to know that information?
Oh, that's, I think, a great question. So there's the portion that will tell you what the site wants, right? Which it'll talk about, like, you need to have minimum number of integrated assessments. This is your minimum number of face-to-face, like, therapy hours. There's also, like, assessment hours, which I always find a little confusing because we're both saying, well, you need to have this many hours of assessment plus this many hours plus this many assessments. And it's like, sometimes the numbers don't jive. It's really bizarre. But that's the way it is. And then there's all, like, there's just like all of the other requirements. Like, you need to be from an APA program, or you need to have like this. We prefer people from, you know, PhD clinical programs. We'll accept counseling, PsyD, school psych, or something like that. So looking at that stuff first, I think is where to start. The other, I feel like, is more about what you're interested in, because some sites will look at that really heavy and some sites don't. And even within our site, that's changed. So we have a new forensic supervisor who is amazing. I adore him, Jeff Hahn. I think he's going to do a presentation with UPA this year. He's wonderful. He's very much like, I don't care if interns have forensic experience when they come to do, because we have three unique match numbers. And that's something to look at too, is are there different match numbers? Because sometimes there's, like, we have a forensic match, clinical match, neuro match number. And so even though it's all one program, there's like separateness within it. And so Jeff, for the forensic piece, is like, I don't care if they have forensic experience. I just want to see if they have good foundational clinical experience. Our neuro supervisors are a little bit more split. One of them was like, I really want just good clinical experience, because you have to be a good clinical psychologist to be a good forensic or neuropsychologist, period. And others like, no, I really want all this neuro experience. And so it just kind of depends. And I think that's not unique to our site. I think a lot of sites are that way. And I feel like I'm rambling now. Did I answer your question?
No, you did. I think it's largely part of like, what are you looking for? So finding that information, and then just kind of like really scanning through their sites. I know several sites, and this isn't a question that was submitted. It's just one that I have that they have separate tracks. Is that kind of what you're meaning by match numbers, or?
So it depends on the site. Some sites, so we have separate tracks with separate match numbers. And that's because, like, so for the 2022-2023 internship year, we wanted two forensic interns for their primary rotation, two clinical interns and two neuros. And that's based on like supervisory availability. So we have the tracks and the match numbers, and then we have secondary rotations and stuff. So that's very structured. Uni has multiple match numbers, and I believe primaries does as well. That looks at like kind of these different tracks. There are other sites that have different like rotations and tracks, but they're not tied to match numbers. And so that's something to look at, is how does that work? So basically, if we have unique match numbers set up, if you were to come and interview at the Utah State Hospital for, let's say, the clinical track, and we match you, we rank you on clinical, you rank us, we match, you are guaranteed that clinical primary rotation because that's the number you matched with. Sites that don't have those unique numbers, but just have all these different tracks, there's not ways to necessarily guarantee it, or that's something you'd want to ask the site.
So you would ask them, like, if we match, then would I like talk with you about solidifying which track, or is that something that you need to know beforehand, or how does that work?
Yeah. So if it's one match number, but they say that we have like five different tracks, I would say, how do you determine who goes to which track?
Gotcha. Okay. Well, Amanda, thank you for being here and rescheduling. I don't have any more questions that were pre-submitted, but for everyone who is watching this, we're going to share Dr. Rapaz's email, and she's available to answer any questions that might have come up from this talk or just that you have in general about APIC internship.
And I'm happy to answer them. I'm just so passionate about students. It's the sad part about my promotion was giving up the internship because I just love students. And so if you guys need anything, have questions, I am more than willing to talk. And even if it's like, even if you shoot me an email and it's like, hey, can we just set up a time to chat? I have a few questions and this is what I'm looking at. I am so for that. And if you haven't gotten a mentor, I'm just going to plug this really quick, Keely. I didn't tell you this, but we have a student mentorship program that kind of like, I don't know, it feels like it kind of fizzled, but you can get a mentor through UPA. That's like a psychologist that's not tied with your school. And I think this would be such a great resource to help you. And really, like, we were trying to put students with ECPs, so they're a little bit closer to that internship application process. But like, that would be another great resource. So,
yeah. And no, I agree. Like, talking with people who have recently lived it and stressed mm-hmm. over it and have some of those like tips to survive it is really critical. And that mentorship program is advertised on the student webpage. Or if you're interested, you can reach out to me at keely.lundy@utah.edu. And I highly recommend it as well. So, okay. Well, thank you for watching and tune in next time to our postdoc fellowship webinar.